The Outdoorsman Radio Show is brought to you by Ellis Outdoors, LLC. This is Talk Radio 680 WCBM. Time now for the Outdoorsman Radio Show with your host, Alan Ellis. Hey, good morning, everybody. Welcome back to the Outdoorsman Radio Show, the second hour here. We had an interesting first hour, a few callers. Joining us right now on the hotline is Chuck Stentz, Maryland Fisheries Service, and we say good morning, Chuck. How are you?
Good morning. Good. How are you?
Good, good. You've never been a guest on our show, have you?
No, I have not.
No, but I've been a guest on your boat a couple of times, if I recall.
It didn't work out real well, did it?
Well, it did. Okay. Hey, look, it was a great experience, and sometimes it's the experience that counts for sure. First time though was great. We did you had the brand new electrofishing boat a couple of years ago. We were down on the Patuxent, and we caught some shad, some American shad, if I recall, for study, and took them down to the hatchery, and I got a tour of the hatchery, and that's where I was introduced to the Atlantic sturgeon that we had there at the hatchery.
Right.
So that's where the story begins. Sturgeon were in preparation for. They're trying to get to be mature. I think how old does a sturgeon have to be to breed, Chuck?
The males, it takes anywhere from 10 to 12 years.
Right,
you know, that all depends on the nutrition they're getting.
And, right,
we can get them mature a little bit faster in the hatchery because of the feed that we feed them. But
yeah.
Generally speaking, it's 10 to 12 years for a male, and then 12 to 15 for a female.
That's kind of the numbers I remember, that's for sure, up to 15. But these fish were immature. These fish were 5, 6, 7 feet long, and they were not mature enough to spawn at that point. So,
correct.
But something happened between that time 4 or 5 years ago, and now where we're doing the sturgeon research on the Nanticoke River system, and that was a change in the listing of the Atlantic sturgeon. So tell me about
in 2012, the National Marine Fisheries Service, they were petitioned to take a look at the Atlantic sturgeon, and through all the research that they did, decided that, yes, they do need protection on the list.
And this is the endangered species list.
On the endangered species list, correct.
And when that happens, people don't seem to understand this, but when that happens, all types of things come into play. All kinds of triggers are pulled. And what happened to our hatchery sturgeon, and where are we with our reintroduction program here in Maryland with the captive sturgeon?
With the introduction of the fish onto the endangered species list, technically all research has to stop. They're protected just like a bald eagle would be, or any other species. And then what we have to do is apply for a federal permit to be able to continue our culturing of our hatchery fish. The fish that we had in the hatchery were grandfathered in, which means we didn't need a permit to keep the fish there, but we couldn't do any research on them. All we could do was normal husbandry practices and, health assessment, things like that. Once we got the permit to be able to culture them, we could continue with any kind of research that we wanted to.
Mm-hmm.
And it takes 6 months to a year to get a permit.
Right.
We were lucky that our friends up in Lamar, Pennsylvania, at the Fish and Wildlife Service, they had already started that process of getting the permit, and basically we piggybacked on their permit because we do, I don't want to say exactly the same work, but,
right,
you know, similar work.
Right, right. So the sturgeon are still being held at the hatchery. By now, I'm guessing they're mature enough to breed.
We do have some that are approaching maturity,
right?
Especially the males. We have plenty of males. I don't want to say plenty.
Yeah.
We do probably have 8 to 10 males that we could spermiate whenever we want every year.
Got it.
The problem is always the females. They take longer to mature. Like I said.
Mm-hmm.
We'll do laparoscopic surgery on them about once a year to see how the eggs are progressing.
Mm-hmm.
They'll carry eggs for a year, 2 years, 3 years, and they look a lot different depending on the stage of maturity.
So once you determine,
what we're looking for is what you would normally see, when you see pictures of caviar,
right?
The pretty black eggs,
and right.
At this point, the one female we have, she still has white eggs in her, so she's not quite
not quite right there yet.
Now,
When I was there, there were a handful of smaller sturgeon, maybe a foot, 15 inches long. What was that all about?
To be able to learn how to culture these fish, what we decided to do was, instead of using these important fish, these wild-caught fish that we were capturing, we never had access to the smaller life stages,
anything
from eggs to what you saw, the 15-inch fish.
Right.
So what we did, we contacted a fella in Canada,
mm-hmm.
and, their laws are a lot different up there. We could actually buy eggs from him or larvae from him and learn to culture fish and make our mistakes on these fish that weren't as valuable as our wild, rare fish that we have in the Chesapeake Bay.
Right.
It helped us a lot to learn all the mistakes of culturing, feeding them, all the problems you have through the entire process, so that if we did get a female that did have the ripe eggs, we wouldn't make those mistakes. So we were just getting ahead of the ball game to use the Canadian sturgeon.
Gotcha. All right. So you are basically looking at fish that are, when they reach maturity, they're basically teenagers, even though they're 10, 11, 12, 13, 14, 15 years old.
Right.
They've reached that ability to breed, unlike other fish that are able to breed rather quickly along the lifestyles. These are pretty primitive creatures.
Yeah. Yeah, they're about 120 million years old, so they were here when the dinosaurs were here.
That's pretty primitive, that's for sure.
Yeah.
First one I ever saw, when I was 12 years old, we were in Quebec, and we were fishing on walleye and pike fishing on the Ottawa River, and somebody caught a sturgeon and had kept it in a pen. I don't know what they were going to do with it, but that was the first one I ever saw. Somebody caught one of those in the river system, and from your notes here, there are sturgeon in those river systems in Canada. Mm-hmm. And along the coast and in our river systems here in Maryland, but the Atlantic sturgeon, I keep saying salmon, I think, the Atlantic sturgeon being 120 million years old, it can pretty well go wherever the suitable habitat is, right?
Correct, yeah.
But the Atlantic sturgeon is not a common species, but widespread, if I'm reading your notes correctly.
Very much so. They're found from Labrador, Canada, the whole way to Florida.
Uh-huh.
And they even have the Gulf sturgeon, which is, around the corner.
Right.
Now we see
pictures of these guys fishing out west for these giant sturgeon in the Snake River and that type of thing. Different species, right?
Yes, they are. Those are the white sturgeon.
White sturgeon. All right. Very good. So at one point, there was actually a commercial fishery on sturgeon here in the Chesapeake Bay. Am I right?
Yeah, it was the early 1900s, you know, 1890, 1900 is when, you know, you just can't sustain a fishery when it takes the, you know, fish that long to mature.
Right.
You know, 15-year-old fish, it takes a long time, you know, of constantly fishing on them. And,
sure.
That pretty much led to the collapse. You know, the overfishing plus also the deterioration of the habitat.
The habitat, sure. I see a note here, 14 feet long, 811 pounds. That's the biggest one ever caught in the bay or the biggest one ever caught ever?
No, that one was caught off the coast of Canada.
Ah.
I couldn't find out exactly where it was. But that was caught off the coast of Canada somewhere up around Labrador, and it was all of 800 pounds.
That fish had to be over 100 years old, don't you think?
I would think, yeah. I mean, who knows how old it was.
Exactly. Well, you know, I know that the commercial watermen occasionally will catch one in their nets on Chesapeake Bay, but you guys go out to intentionally catch sturgeon.
Yeah, we started in 2012.
All right. When they were put on the endangered species list.
We started a little bit before that.
Right.
We had been getting a lot of reports of sturgeon in especially the Marshy Hope Creek.
Right.
We were getting increasing numbers of reports. And then we decided, well, we ought to take a look at this. So we contacted some of our friends down at VCU, Virginia Commonwealth University,
mm-hmm.
and they were already doing this work in the James River, and he brought some of his nets up.
Okay.
And it's pretty specialized gear. You have gill nets that are pretty big.
I've seen it.
12-inch gill nets.
That's big, yep.
So they came up in 2012 and just came up for the afternoon, and we tried to catch one or two. And just then we realized how difficult this was going to be.
Exactly. It's not something you just go out there and chuck a net in the river and wait for something to swim by, I guess.
Yeah,
I mean, in effect it is, but you've had to specialize your methods, and that's for sure. So
very much so. Even using the right gear,
sure.
We still couldn't catch any. We just had to figure out how to use the gear.
Got it. Well, that's a good place to start our next conversation because, Chuck, this is commercial radio. We do have to take a little break, so hang with us here for a couple minutes, and we'll come back and talk about the focus on the research and how you guys actually go about doing this. Just one more quick question. We don't have any, according to what I'm reading here, we don't have any any evidence of reproduction here in the Chesapeake Bay. Is that correct?
Well, up until 2014, I would have said no.
But we
can talk about that.
All right, let's hang on and talk about that, and then we'll talk about how you guys go about doing this. And I've witnessed this, folks. I've been on the boat. It's a lot of work, a lot of hard work. All right, let me tell you about our friends at Clyde's Sports Shop. Look, if you're going fishing, if you're going crabbing this summer, you need to stop by Clyde's. And you know, first of all, they've got the biggest selection of live bait. They've got the ice and the coolers and all that. But they've also got a big selection of crabbing supplies. Crabbing supplies like all the recreational rings, all the recreational crab traps, the open top, the four doors, you name it, they've got them all. And they've got the best prices. They've got the bushel baskets. They've got the plastic baskets. They've got the trot lines if you want to do that, especially the bait, all the crabbing bait. And, you know, they'll give you some advice, too. They also have, you know, any kind of fishing tackle. If you're fishing off the pier and you want to drop a crab trap overboard, well, that's great. They've got the bait and tackle for that, too, and the best advice. You can ask any of them down there where the fish are biting, and they'll refer you to somebody, or they'll tell you they know what's going on. And you got to stop by Clyde Sports Shop, 2307 Hammonds Ferry Road in Lansdowne, and that's just off Beltway exit That'd be number 9. That's right, Hammonds Ferry Road. So just check that out. And also the 24-hour fishing hotline is 247-3474, 247-FISH for the 24-hour hotline. And then we'll go from there to the website, ClydeSports.com. Check that out, too. They've got all their specials, all the gun deals and everything else on the website. So that's Clyde Sports Shop. Proud to have them as a sponsor. We'll be right back after this. Time to book your dove hunt with Upper Bay Gun Club. Hunt over sunflowers on great farms loaded with doves. Dove Hunt runs $150 per person and includes lunch. Hurry, the early dates are filling up fast and space is limited. Hunt deer, waterfowl, and turkeys on private farms with Upper Bay Gun Club. Choose a yearly membership like I did, or call about guided day hunts or even yearly leases. Tom Slavin has decades of experience and can answer all your questions. Call Tom at 443-309-3788 for the best hunting of your life. Call Tom at 443-309-3788 for Upper Bay Gun Club. Alan Ellis here for Catonsville Linex and Bay Linex of Glen Burnie spray-on bedliners. You know, Linex spray-on bedliners are rated number one and carry a nationwide lifetime warranty. A Linex spray-on bedliner completely seals out water, meaning no rust. Your tools and your tackle, crabbing, and hunting gear can't hurt your truck bed. Choose a Linex premium bedliner that looks great and offers UV protection, or the Linex Extra with Kevlar and paint match. And Catonsville Linex and Bay Linex now offer truck gear, the toughest accessories for your trucks. Step bars, tonneau covers, floor liners, grill guards, fender flares, and much more. These guys provide the best protection for your truck. Protect your investment, your pickup truck, like I did with a Linex bedliner and truck gear accessories. Catonsville Linex, located at 5617 Baltimore National Pike, inside Beltway Exit 15A. Call 410-455-0800. That's 410-455-0800. Bay Linex of Glen Burnie, located at 201 Wholesome Way in Glen Burnie. Call 410-789-0199. That's 410-789-0199. Nothing is more frustrating than a dead battery. When your truck won't start or your boat or ATV leaves you stranded far from home, that's not good. The solution is Battery Warehouse. Not only does Battery Warehouse provide batteries for your car or truck, you can find marine batteries for cranking or trolling, ATV batteries, tractor batteries, motorcycle batteries, and batteries for all outdoors equipment. Did you know Battery Warehouse has batteries for wild game feeders, dog collars, cell phones, predator calls, and trail cameras? How about your video camera? Or if you tow your boat or trailer, your trailer brake control battery? Any battery you need. With 10 locations in Central Maryland, there's a Battery Warehouse convenient to you. Bel Air, Frederick, Cockeysville, Glen Burnie, Dundalk, Hagerstown, Westminster, Eldersburg, Parkville, and Woodlawn. Visit BatteryWarehouseMaryland.com online for the phone numbers and more information. When you need a hot flash, get to the Battery Warehouse near you.
If you're a working man and your truck breaks down, you only need to know one repair shop, W&W Tire and Auto Service in Finksburg. They built your reputation on getting you in, fixed, and out the door quickly, efficiently, and at a very competitive price. Bridgestone and Firestone tires for pickups, SUVs, and commercial vehicles, large trucks, motorhomes, even diesel engines are no problem. W&W Tire and Auto Service on Route 140, 3233 Baltimore Boulevard in Finksburg. Just look for that big American flag. Call for an appointment, 410-833-8410, W&W Tire and Auto.
Start your day with Sean and Frank, Maryland's wake-up call. Weekdays 5 to 9 a.m. on Talk Radio 680 WCBM.
Cakes and rockfish too. We thank the Lord and said the blessing, but what we forgot to do was to thank the man who by hand helped put food upon our plate. The man that dipped the crabs, hooked the fish, and cut the bait. The man that works our rivers, he's our neighbor, he's our friend. His backbone and his bones, the way he makes his living. Talking about the water man.
Let's talk to our buddy Chuck. Are you with me, Chuck?
Yes, I am.
All right, good. Okay, so we were talking about the folks from VMC that came up and said, all you got to do is throw a couple nits over and you got it, right?
Yeah.
That didn't quite work out, though.
No.
All right. So we get in the boat, and you say the first thing we got to do is check what? What do we check first?
You mean as far as...
Yeah, we're going to go out and check our telemetry stuff, right?
Yeah, it's basically a two-pronged approach with how we're doing the research currently with the sturgeon.
Right.
We have the gill netting part.
Right.
And, with the gill netting, we implant the sturgeon, if we catch one, with a transmitter. The transmitters last for 10 years once you turn them on. So for a species that will live for, 60, 80 years, you need a transmitter that's going to last for a while. And currently, we're using transmitters that will keep right on working for a full 10 years.
Right.
So what we do is, now that we have a fish that's out there and it's transmitting, we have a company that developed an acoustic receiver. And what you do is you just you put these receivers out in the water and they just sit there and listen for the telltale sign of your fish with the transmitter in it. Currently, DNR is responsible for monitoring 30 different receivers. We work on the Eastern Shore tributaries, the Chop Tank, the Nanticoke, along with the Marshy Hope, and also the Pocomoke River. They're not the only rivers in the state that have receivers in them. There are other groups. We work real close with University of Maryland, and they're handling the main bay. There's an array right by the Bay Bridge that actually my group maintains just because of our location. But we also have arrays in the Elk River, close to where the C&D Canal is.
Now these are receivers. These are not transmitters. These are receiver stations that you're monitoring for only for sturgeon.
No, you can, any fish out there that a researcher tags a fish
right.
with one of these transmitters, it'll pick up.
Okay, so you've got these dozen receivers around the bay monitoring all the tagged species of fish. Okay, so you guys, your team manages some, other teams manage others.
Yeah.
And each of those tagged fish, each of those transmitters gives off a unique signal so that you know which species and which fish is sending you the signal and where they are, if they swim anywhere within range of the receiver. Is that right?
Right.
Okay.
Any fish that we detect,
right?
We can tell who tagged it, when they tagged it, where they tagged it. And sometimes there'll be a little bit more information that we can get out of it.
Right. So, focusing back on the sturgeon,
mm-hmm.
you've got your receiver stations, and that's what we check first to see if there's been sturgeon in the area in the last X number of hours, correct?
Correct.
Okay. So if there is a sturgeon that has a receiver in it, we know that sturgeon is in the river system, or was at least. And the hope is if you can find the area of the river where that fish is located, there may be other fish with that one.
Correct, yeah.
Okay, so that's what we did. We found a couple of fish. I think there were two distinct signals there. And so you set your gill nets below and above, downstream and upstream of those sturgeon, and wait for them to move.
Yeah.
And hopefully you'll either recapture the one that you've got the transmitter in, or you'll catch a fish that you've not tagged before.
Right. That's what we're looking for. We're looking to put as many transmitters out there as possible.
Right.
So what we do is we use our manual tracking device and we try to home in on exactly where he is, hoping that he may have a girlfriend with him.
Right. That's the idea, of course.
Yeah.
So the day I was there, we had fish in the river. We had our nets set on either side of them. And look, you guys have this down to a science as far as a process is concerned. You set the nets for an hour, then you pick them up.
Yeah.
Then you reset up or down. You try to figure out where the fish is. You could reset them in the same spot. You could move upriver. You could move downriver. You've got about a mile or so of river there that you work each day. Is that correct, or something like that?
Yeah, especially in the marshy Hope Creek, we like to keep our nets fairly close together.
Right.
Our permit allows us to, well, we can fish as many nets as we want.
Right.
But we've come to the conclusion that four nets is about as many nets as we can handle.
Yeah.
And be able to check them every hour. Our permit that we have to check the fish or check the nets every hour on the hour.
This is a gill net. This is a net that's going to capture the fish. You guys have to get to that fish very quickly.
Yeah.
And remove the fish from the net. And so you start 8 o'clock in the morning. You'll make, what, six sets maybe during the day, maybe a few more than that. I can't recall how many we actually did. But
what we try to do is we try to get out on the river before the first tide change
right.
of the day. It varies. It's like any other
sure.
tide. There are some days when we're out there at 5 a.m., we always like to hit it right before a slack tide. It seems like the sturgeon at a slack tide, they like to get up and move around. And then when you have these real fast-running tides like you do in the Marshy Hope, we've also been told on the James River they do the same thing. They'll just kind of hunker down and sit in place and kind of, you know, just go with the or just kind of sit still in the falling tide. And then once the slack tide comes around, then they get up and start moving around again.
Right.
But we don't actually reset the nets. We used anchored gill nets. So once they're placed, they're there for the day. We just lift the net up and basically comb through the net.
Exactly.
For the fish.
Yeah.
And then just reset it.
Right. And the debris. That's right. You do set them. I remember now. You set them and then you tow them to the next location. You know.
Correct. Yeah.
And you fold them up at the end of the day. It's.
Yeah.
I can't remember. It was you and is it three helpers?
Yeah.
Yeah. Three. Yeah.
It works best with four people on the boat.
Yep.
We can do it with less. But if you catch a big fish, the more hands, the better. It really helps having an extra set of hands or two.
Oh, it's a lot of work. I watched that, and you didn't let me help. Thank God. But you guys work. I mean, you take these nets out there in the barrels. You stash, you know, you get the nets out, set the first time. You take the barrels ashore. You set the barrels, you know, to get some room on the boat to work. And then you set the nets for an hour. Then you go pull the nets and check them. And they're full of debris. They're full of logs and trash and snot and everything else. What was that snotty thing you caught?
Colonial hydrozoans.
Yeah, they're not very attractive, and I don't imagine they're good to eat. But
no.
But yeah, they certainly can foul a net. That's for sure.
Yeah. The bad part about it is, if you get a net that's fouled,
yes,
you know, you get a lot of detritus in it. You know, I think the fish can see that, and it's almost like a wall where they don't go.
Uh huh.
They won't go in it. That's the other reason why we like to set close to a slack tide.
Right.
Is you get a real good set that first set, you know, where the net's
sure.
not acting like a filter, just filtering all that detritus.
Exactly. So, okay, you've been doing this program for what? Is this the third year now?
We started technically in 2012 with the help of VCU.
Right.
In 2013, then we did our first year dedicated sampling for the sturgeon.
Okay. And how many sturgeon have you wound up catching?
To date, we're up to 15.
15.
And yeah, we caught eight fish in 2014, and we caught seven fish this past year.
Right. And you caught two the day after I was with you.
Yeah. Isn't it amazing how that happened?
Should have been here tomorrow.
Yeah.
But that's okay. That's okay.
Yeah.
I know Bay Times has done an extensive article on that. I'm sure you can find that in their archives. But Yeah, you were a little more successful with the environmental magazine than you were with the fishing guy, but that's okay.
Yeah.
I get that. But no, it's a fascinating program. It's fascinating to watch. It's a lot of work, and it's an effort that's designed, at least if I'm reading it right, to ensure that this species will continue to live and thrive and hopefully reproduce in the Chesapeake region. It's not a valuable, food fish. It's not a valuable commercial, fish, but it's something that's in the environment, that, you know, needs to be protected and needs to be managed to the point where it's going to be sustainable on its own in the future. And that's,
correct,
that's where we are in the research stage of this. And that's what you guys are doing is you're out there. You got 15 tagged fish out there. How often in the marshy hope do you see those same tagged fish? I mean, I know they come and go, but I mean, not all 15 of them are out there swimming around at all times.
No, in 2014, like I said, we tagged, 8 fish.
Right.
We tagged 2 females and, 6 males. That was the most excited I've ever been on a boat was the day that we caught the female and male together. The female was, I think she was 7 feet, 3 inches long and weighed, 154 pounds.
Wow. Wow.
So, you know, it kind of helped with us having our hatchery fish. We're used to dealing with big fish like that.
Right.
So it did help us, not make mistakes with her.
Sure. So you've got 1 female and 14 males? Is that what I'm hearing you
no,
say?
No, we have 2 females.
Oh, 2 females and 13
yeah,
males.
2 females and 14 males. And then Delaware Department of Fish and Game, Fish and Wildlife, I'm sorry. They also caught one this past year as well. So
right.
For the river, we're up to 16.
16, gotcha.
Yeah.
All right, we have a question from somebody you might know there. Let me talk to my producer here for a second. All right, Chuck still with me?
Yeah.
Okay. Dale from Easton. Good morning, Dale.
Good morning, Alan.
Chuck, how are you?
How you doing?
All right, Dale, how are you?
How are your birds?
How did I know you were going to ask?
Just a quick. Listen, my topic was a little off track, but what about short nosers, Chuck? What's the status of short nose, and is anything being done with them? Because I know years ago people didn't think we had it. Well, lo and behold, Upper Bay has produced several over the years.
Yeah, when we had the sturgeon reward program, we would get calls. Actually, the Fish and Wildlife would get calls every once in a while about a sturgeon caught in the Upper Bay someplace, and either their group or our group would go up and check it out. And you would get one every once in a while. We really don't focus on the short-nosed sturgeon. Mainly because we kind of homed in on the Nanticoke River with this potential spawning population in the Marshy Hope. And we just never really, you know, have been anywhere where the short nose are.
Chuck, are they a different classification on the list? Or are they same thing as the... the other sturgeon, or are they a different classification? Because I know when we would get them in the Upper Bay pound nets, we were told not to even touch them.
Yeah, they've been on the endangered species list since 1967, I think.
Short nose. That's a short nose sturgeon now.
Yeah, they don't get very big. They're I think they get around 3.5 feet long. That's
36 inches was the biggest ones we ever saw.
Yeah, that's about as big as they get.
But nobody's doing any research on them, Chuck, or status or anything?
No. I know the Fish and Wildlife had a project over on the Potomac River several years ago. They caught 2 fish, and they put the acoustic transmitters in them as well. I don't think their transmitters lasted as long as ours will. I think they were maybe a 2-year transmitter or a 3-year maybe. They track them up and down the Potomac. And then, you know, unless you have a lot of receivers out there, once they're outside of the range, you know, you can't hear them any longer.
Yeah, okay.
All right. Well,
I just didn't know if anybody was fooling with them or not. It's sort of a forgotten species, I guess, because they're a lot less common than the Atlantic sturgeon.
Few and far between.
Yeah.
Exactly.
All right,
Dale. Thanks for that.
Appreciate it. Chuck. See you next Saturday.
Thank you.
There you go.
All right, see you now.
There goes Dale. Let's see what David has to say. David.
Hello.
You still with us? What's up, David?
Hey. Good morning, guys.
Yeah.
I used to work gill nets and pound nets too, and I'm just wondering how many other species are you guys catching in your pound net or your gill nets? And
when they're doing the sturgeon research,
yes, and are they doing anything like? I'm pretty sure they're picking up rockfish and perch and stuff.
Well,
like
you don't
that,
know or, that. Why don't you ask the guy who's doing the survey, Chuck?
You got to remember, we're using big net. We're using 10-inch, 12-inch, and 14-inch gill net.
You're not having a mortality rate with other fish?
No.
No, most fish go right through the net. The only thing that we catch, and I don't want to say commonly, we'll catch a carp every once in a while. We've never caught a rockfish. Again, we're up in the rivers. We're way up in the rivers.
Yeah, actually. Up in the marsh.
And carp, a 10-inch gill net, it's got to be pretty big for us to be able to catch it. We have caught a crab.
yeah, that's right. Exactly. So,
pretty much the other species, the mortality rate is rare then.
Zero.
Oh, yeah. There is no mortality. That's one of the reasons why we check the nets every hour on the hour.
Remember that, David. These nets aren't soaking out there for, 24 hours. These nets are in there for an hour, and then they're checked, and then they're reset. And okay. With a 10...
And the data that you're receiving is... What are you doing with the data? Is it just about reproduction?
Well, any fish that we catch, it's not just our telemetry arrays that we get data from. We have researchers from Canada to Florida that all use the same equipment. So the beauty of that is we can leverage their arrays, their telemetry arrays, with our transmitters, our fish. We call them our fish. And conversely, we do the same thing with them. The receiver array that we have at the Bay Bridge, we get a lot of striped bass out there. University of Maryland has a project ongoing with striped bass, and we're catching striped bass that were tagged in the Potomac. Last year we had a bunch of striped bass that were tagged in Maine. This year we have a couple that were tagged in Massachusetts. So it isn't just our species that the receivers pick up. Any other researcher that uses this technology, we can leverage each other's equipment. That is what makes it so beautiful. Like the fish that we've tagged so far, our fish, we've received data from South Carolina, North Carolina, and also Delaware. So...
Now, wait, when you say that, Chuck, are you saying that these fish have been to those locations?
Yeah. Or,
so our fish, you catching the marshy hope, they travel the coast. I mean, that's the whole, that's what you're telling us.
Yeah, it's really cool. We can even tell when our fish leave the river. We have receivers the whole way down the river to the mouth.
Right.
We can tell when they leave, how long they stay in the river, where they're hanging out in the river. And then, again, leveraging other people's receivers, the U.S. Navy has a huge array down by the mouth of the bay.
Right.
And we can tell when they leave the bay, and we can also tell when they come back, in the spring.
Gotcha.
Okay, and my last question, what's the goal behind this research?
Well, to be able to, now that we know that there are fish in the Nanticoke, we just want to see if there's any spawning fish ongoing in, because it's always been thought that there was no no spawning in Maryland. But with us catching these two females in August and September with eggs in them and the males having sperm in them, you know, you put two and two together and you say, okay, these fish may be up here to spawn.
Mm-hmm.
So it gives us more insight into what's going on in their life cycle.
Okay. All right.
David, thanks for the call. We appreciate that. Chuck, hang in there. We got to take another commercial break, and we'll be right back to you. Okay? Okay. Let me talk a little bit about Clyde Sports Shop, and not just the fishing and crabbing part. I'd like to tell you about some firearms that they carry. You know, Clyde's has been a long, long time, probably more than 40 years, Browning dealer here in Maryland. And they've got, every Browning that you could need, want, or imagine pretty much in stock, or they can get it. And now they've started to carry the Browning ammunition, which is new from Browning. They got a good selection of 22 ammo, which has been in short supply in this country for a long time. But if you're into the shotgun shooting sports through the summer, and there's a lot of sporting clays, tournaments, and things like that, one I particularly like to shoot, we were away during that time, but it's a lot of fun to go out there and break some clay targets. The 725 Satori sporting model is a perfect blend of beauty and performance. It's an over and under shotgun. It's got all the choke tubes, a ported barrel, triple trigger system. It's a great little over and under firearm if you'd like to try that for shooting sports. And there's also a field model if you'd like to take it into the field if you do some upland bird hunting or something like that. And then there's the BT-99. It's a competition shotgun for trap shooters. And they can give you all the instructions on what that's all about, but it's got a backboard barrel and uses the Invector Plus choke tube system and so forth. And Clyde's does carry not only trap and skeet loads, but shooting vests and gloves and range bags and hearing and eye protection. They even carry shot for reloading as well. So you might want to check all that out. And, of course, they have all the Browning firearms for hunting, the new, the BPS pump shotgun, the A5, and all the others in camo and, ready to go for any hunting situation. So check it out, Clyde Sports Shop. They also have a full-service gunsmith, does repairs, cleaning, gunsmithing, scope mounting, and all those services. Clyde Sports Shop, 2307 Hammonds Ferry Road in Lansdowne, just off Beltway exit number 9. We're at 410-242-6108, 410-242-6108. Hey, for great fishing tackle, crabbing supplies, and up-to-date fishing and crabbing information, I recommend Fishbones Bait and Tackle in Pasadena. To get there, take Route 100 to the end. Hop on Mountain Road towards Gibson Island. Go 2.5 miles to 4729 Mountain Road. All you need for any type of fishing, crabbing, and the best fishing report on the Mid-Bay. Fishbones also carries the best stainless steel crab steamers you'll ever find. Call 410-360-0573. That's 410-360-0573 for Fishbones Bait and Tackle in Pasadena. Hey, Maryland's Upper Eastern Shore has a rich tradition for dove and waterfowl, deer and turkey hunting, and now you can hunt over a dozen Upper Shore farms with Upper Bay Gun Club. Choose a yearly membership, like I did, and hunt all season long, or call about guided day hunts with Upper Bay Gun Club, or even yearly leases. Tom Slavin has decades of experience and can answer all your questions. Give Tom a call at 443-309-3788 for the best hunting of your life. Call Tom at 443-309-3788 for Upper Bay Gun Club. Hey, Alan Ellis here for Bay Linex of Glen Burnie and Catonsville Linex Spray-On Bedliners. You know Linex Spray-On Bedliners are rated number one, and they carry a nationwide lifetime warranty. A Linex Spray-On Bedliner completely seals out water, meaning no rust. Your tools, your tackle, your crabbing and hunting gear can't hurt your truck bed. Choose the Linex Premium Bedliner that looks great and offers UV protection, or the Linex Extra with Kevlar and paint match. You know what? Bay Linex and Catonsville Linex now offer truck gear, the toughest accessories for your truck. Step bars, tonneau covers, floor liners, grill guards, fender flares, and much more. These guys provide the best protection for your truck. Protect your investment, your pickup truck like I did, the Linex Bedliner, and truck gear accessories. Bay Linex of Glen Burnie is located at 201 Wholesome Way in Glen Burnie. Of course, call 410-789-0199. That's 410-789-0199.
1-800-259-9999. Catonsville Linex, located 5617 Baltimore National Pike, inside Beltway Exit 15A. Call 410-455-0800, 410-455-0800. Nothing is more frustrating than a dead battery. When your truck won't start or your boat or ATV leaves you stranded far from home, that's not good. The solution is Battery Warehouse. Not only does Battery Warehouse provide batteries for your car or truck, you can find marine batteries for cranking or trolling, ATV batteries, tractor batteries, motorcycle batteries, and batteries for all outdoors equipment. Did you know Battery Warehouse has batteries for wild game feeders, dog collars, cell phones, predator calls, and trail cameras? How about your video camera? Or if you tow your boat or trailer, your trailer brake control battery? Any battery you need. With 10 locations in Central Maryland, there's a Battery Warehouse convenient to you. Bel Air, Frederick, Cockeysville, Glen Burnie, Dundalk, Hagerstown, Westminster, Eldersburg, Parkville, and Woodlawn. Visit BatteryWarehouseMaryland.com online for the phone numbers and more information. When you need a hot flash, get to the Battery Warehouse near you. If you're a working man and your truck breaks down, you only need to know one repair shop, W&W Tire and Auto Service in Finksburg. They built their reputation on getting you in, fixed, and out the door quickly, efficiently, and at a very competitive price. Bridgestone and Firestone tires for pickups, SUVs, and commercial vehicles, large trucks, motorhomes, even diesel engines are no problem. W&W Tire and Auto Service on Route 140, 3233 Baltimore Boulevard in Finksburg. Just look for that big American flag. Call for an appointment, 410-833-8410, W&W.
This is Les Consolving, inviting you to join me for Uninhibited Radio, where we leave no sacred cow unmilked. Sunday nights from 10 to 1 on Talk Radio 680 WCBM.
We're back with Chuck. Can you hear me, Chuck? You good?
Yep.
All right, man.
Yeah, I'm here.
All right. We got just a couple minutes left. You've given us a little view into your life, getting out there early in the morning and setting those nets. And, you know, you've got all the equipment on board there to keep the fish alive and then tag it, you know, in a timely manner, get it back overboard. You put an incision in the fish and you suture it back in. And I've seen guys do that in the past. And then, once that's done, you turn on the transmitter and boom, we're in business with getting the information back into those receivers.
Yep.
Got it. So, you do other studies like, DNA to see if these fish are related to other fish, or how does that all work?
Yeah, when we get the fish on board, we have an initial external examination that we always do. We just check the fish to, you know, make sure they're healthy.
Yeah.
We also look to see if they have any other tags on them from other researchers.
Yeah, good.
We have a whole process that we go through.
Have you caught any fish that have been tagged by other research projects?
We thought we had one. It had a pit tag in it.
Uh-huh.
A pit tag is basically the same thing as people put in their dogs and cats, the microchip.
Right, the little microchip, yep.
Yeah, some researchers use those.
Uh-huh.
Most people don't even know they're in there unless you have a pit tag reader.
Right.
But we tag our fish with a whole array of tags. We use T-bar tags, which most fishermen see when the Diamond Jim contest that goes on, pit tags, and then again with our transmitter. But what we do is we take a sample of the fish for a DNA study.
Right.
And we just take just a little clip of the caudal fin.
Right.
And we send that to get it analyzed.
Right.
The folks at the USGS do that in Leetown at the Leetown Science Center.
Got it.
And then they can do the analysis on it to tell us the river of origin and what distinct population segment it belongs to as well.
That's interesting. So are we related to any other group of fish here in Maryland, or are they pretty much?
Well, tentatively, we only have, like I said, we only have 16 samples. So
right.
They can't statistically say that, you know, our group is a distinct spawning population. But what they have told us so far is that our nanticoke fish are genetically related to fish that are in the Pamunkey River, which is a tributary to the York River in Virginia.
Right.
And that's been the kind of bombshell that we never would have thought that they were in there. But
isn't that the kind of stuff that keeps you going?
Yeah, it's really cool, because then you email the researchers down there, and what we found is that some of our sturgeon that we tagged decided they didn't want to come back to the Nanticoke this year. They went to the Pamunkey.
Uh-huh.
And vice versa. We had two of their fish show up in the Nanticoke in May of last year, and they stayed there until October.
That's
and they were actually up on what we, you know, are suspecting are the spawning grounds. So the DNA does mirror what we're seeing in the river.
That's pretty cool. So I guess there's no way to really know that if and when these fish have spawned, if they've spawned at all, unless you do other surveys with other types of equipment.
Yeah, the University of Maryland has, along with our project, they're putting out what are called egg mats. And what they'll do is they'll place those in strategic parts of the river to see if we can catch any eggs. And now that we've had the NOAA Chesapeake Bay office folks come out last year, and they did a habitat mapping of the Marshy Hope Creek and portions of the Nanticoke River.
Right.
And
go ahead.
And that kind of helped us determine where, you know, potentially good spawning habitat is.
Cool. Very good. All right, sir. Well, Chuck, listen, I appreciate you being with us this morning. There's the music that tells us we're at the end of the hour. It probably went a little faster than you thought it would.
Yeah.
All right, my friend. We'll be talking to you soon, and thanks again.